Last week, Microsoft held Build, one of its two biggest annual conferences. There were all kinds of announcements, from an Android-based device platform for agents to seven new or updated Microsoft-developed AI models. Today, after taking a week to digest all the news, we're going to talk about what we learned from Build and go deeper on some of the products and services announced there that we think will matter to enterprises. Welcome to the Directions on Microsoft Briefing podcast. I'm Mary Jo Foley, the editor here at Directions. I'm your host for the series of podcasts for those interested in the Microsoft Enterprise IT ecosystem. My guest today is Directions analyst David Berry. David has more than two decades of architecture and delivery experience in positions with Avanade, Booz Allen Hamilton, and EMC. And just before he joined Directions at Avanade, he led global and regional engineering teams and advised on technology strategy and adoption. Welcome, David. Thanks for joining me on the episode today. It's been too long since you've been here.
It has, Mary Jo. Thanks very much for having me back. I've missed it and look forward to today's episode.
All right. I'm so glad you want to talk about Build because I always like digesting and dissecting these kinds of events.
Yes.
So let's start out with some of the many agent and AI model announcements that Microsoft made at Build. As we've all noticed, they're really putting the pedal to the metal to develop and roll out all their own AI models lately. So, curious what you think here. What does this say about its strategy and relationship with OpenAI?
Well, I actually don't think it changes much about their relationship with OpenAI for right now. I think the big shift already happened when, you know, they agreed to see other companies, but they both still need each other.
Right, true.
Yeah. The break in and this partnership with Anthropic, though, I think was the beginning of Microsoft's pivot through to a multi-vendor, multi-model provider, which seems to be part of their bigger plan.
Right. So. Okay. Yeah, I want to ask you more about that because I think even though they're doing all these different things on their own with their AI models, they seem to still talk a lot at Microsoft about model choice. Like they take that as a point of pride. So I'm curious if you think they're going to continue to hold that stance as their own models evolve and proliferate. Do you think customers are still going to have the option to use like GPT or Claude inside Microsoft 365 Copilot or GitHub Copilot? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think model choice is here to stay, sort of. you know, people want the right tool for the job. But yeah. I think what's going to happen is they're going to have to start paying for the privilege. Claude and GPT will continue to be available, barring any falling out with Microsoft. And then, you know, Microsoft is introducing its own models, so they'll be part of the mix. Right. And there's even a reference architecture for companies to add their own models into Copilot. So I really don't see choice going away. The other thing is that Microsoft is starting to focus on some multi-model workflows. What I mean by that as an example is if you take a look at Microsoft Researcher, that agent can now use both GPT and Claude models to generate a response. So, for example, in critique mode, which is now the default for Researcher, it uses one model to generate the response and the other to check the response. And then Council uses both models to generate responses and a third judge model to assess the results. So these are generally going to increase the accuracy and reliability overall. So Microsoft, I think, is liking the direction of doing this.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but I think what's really going to happen is, you know, choosing the model is not the choice that we make. You know, as I said, people want the right tool for the job, and I don't think most people are going to want to sit around and get into the nuances of which model is best for creating a PowerPoint. So they're going to turn to their agents and get the task done. And I think the agent is going to be where, you know, people are going to be making the choices.
Interesting. Okay. I also think you brought this up on one of our edit calls that we have internally. I think where they're going is their models may become like the default. You know, if you don't pick a model, you get the Microsoft model and or may become the cheapest option. as a way to kind of drive people that way, right?
Right, exactly. So they made a big deal about the models when they introduced them about being cost effective. And I think we're seeing a lot of cost pressure come to the forefront now, not just with Microsoft, but across the board. And by introducing their own models at a lower price point, they can, you know, give companies the opportunity to use them.
Right.
But I think as we also watch what Microsoft is doing with their pricing models and this shift that they're signaling to cost plus usage, what we actually may see is Microsoft replace the default models with their own and then upcharge for the use of the premier frontier models.
Yep. I think that's where we're going. That makes sense. Okay, so we're talking about agents and all things agentic. Of course, that was a huge theme at Build. They even took the wraps off something I was surprised about. Their thing they call Scout, which is a personal agent that Microsoft is building on top of OpenClaw. So I've been following this since it was basically the germ of an idea 60 days ago. And now they're ready to throw it out there into the Frontier testing program. I am stunned how quickly this happened. So I'm curious if you think Scout and these other kinds of new always-on agents that Microsoft is building may change the perceptions enterprises have about things like OpenClaw not being ready for the enterprise in terms of security and governance, and probably other agents as they're announced.
Yeah, it was interesting to see, you know, the demo of Scout there. And I think there's a lot going on with Scout, even before we get to OpenClaw. You know, if you're talking about trust in the enterprise, you know, there's a much longer road to hoe. It sort of feels like we went from crawl to run and skipped
totally.
Walk.
Totally. Oh my gosh. Especially with this.
The way I look at it is like most enterprises are still dealing with, you know, data cleanup and security for just the AI capabilities that we have already. So the idea of an autonomous agent wandering through their data is probably unsettling. The governance hasn't even caught up with what we have right now, let alone, you know, get ready for autonomous agents. Having its own identity raises questions about onboarding an agent, you know, what the exit process looks like, what group memberships does it have, what permissions, what policies need to be added. There's a whole lot to it before, in my opinion, it can really become viable. I mean, everything you have to do for a user, you have to do for Scout and these autonomous agents, basically.
Right. I know they've been saying they were going to do that, like come out with a category of agents where they had their own email account and their own Teams presence and all that.
Right.
And I felt like maybe we were further away from that happening, but it's like, no, Scout is going to be the first thing that has that. And it really makes me question, like, what's the licensing model going to look like for these always on agents? Are you going to license them like a person? I guess so. Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's my take on it. I mean, Microsoft execs have been messaging this over the last year or two that, you know, you treat agents just like you would users.
Right.
So I think, you know, between that, the whole idea that these autonomous agents have an Entra ID, you know, is leading us down that path that, yeah, they're going to be licensed in some way as users. And on top of that, if AI is truly going to be reducing employees in companies, you got to look at it from Microsoft's standpoint that their other subscriptions are going to drop in numbers. So to make up for that, it seems to make sense that agents will be licensed. They may not be licensed exclusively as a one cost fixed fee type thing. It may be a lower cost with, you know, some sort of usage charge on top of that, because that seems to be the direction that Microsoft is going in general. But yeah, this whole thing is going to be really interesting to see how it plays out.
It definitely is. Okay, so there also were some hardware announcements at Build besides the Android devices I mentioned at the beginning. The week before Build, we had Computex, and there were a lot of new Windows PCs announced that are based on NVIDIA's ARM-based RTX Spark. And at Build, Microsoft even announced a dev box that's going to be out in the fall that will be built on the same chip. So all these PCs, including a new very high-end Surface that's coming, all look really nice. But I'm curious if you think enterprise developers are going to bite on Microsoft's argument that you need this kind of souped-up high-end hardware to run models locally. That seems to be their pitch on this, right?
Yeah, it's that Surface RTX looks so nice.
I can't wait to see the price tag. I'm sure it's astronomical. Yeah.
And that's definitely going to be part of the equation. But I don't think it's going to be the developers that they have to sell. I think it's going to be the bosses. And looking at what they rolled out, I see, you know, two different business cases potentially. The RTX Spark dev box that they announced was basically a high-end box and targeting local model development. So not necessarily your typical developer. Everything indicated that it could be used for inference, fine-tuning, training. So this is going to be a smaller target market, but one that benefits from using this kind of hardware versus the expense of using cloud GPUs. Mm-hmm. So that could be a very viable business case for companies in that market. I think the broader developer market may not necessarily need the RTX Spark, but looking at the initial impact to changing GitHub Copilot's pricings, for example, devs would probably benefit from having something like the Ultra to run models locally, and that way they're not incurring those additional AI costs. I mean, it's no longer an all-you-can-eat buffet, and it's driving up the cost of development again, something AI was supposed to reduce. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the other challenge in the mix is that enterprise hardware is usually on a 2 or 3 year cycle. So I don't know where that's going to go.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, this is a good part for me to take a break because I want to talk about something that we've had under wraps here at Directions for a while, our Atlas AI Assistant. We're now testing this with a select group of Directions on Microsoft members. We may be biased, but we think this is going to be the AI companion of your Microsoft licensing and technology dreams. We built it to make it simpler for you to find the enterprise-focused Microsoft information you need based on the insights our team of experts have developed and curated over the past several years. Once we launch the Atlas AI Assistant in July, it will be available only to Directions on Microsoft members, not the general public. So make sure, if you're not already a member, you check out the different ways you can join at directionsonmicrosoft.com. There you can see the membership benefits that you could be making use of right now. Okay, back to David and our post-build ruminations. All right, I have to talk about this, even though it wasn't technically an announcement. It was kind of a non-announcement at Build, or at least a no-show. But everybody was thinking Microsoft was going to announce the so-called Copilot Super app at Build. Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, acknowledged its existence during his keynote and said to expect it this summer. But that's all we got, really. We didn't see a demo. We didn't get a lot of details. So let's talk about what we think this kind of super app might look like and what it potentially could help with. So we're just blue skying it here. So let's go. David, what do you say?
All right. So, well, I have to say that unless we're talking like Star Trek's computer, I'm a little skeptical of the concept of a super app here.
Yeah.
But if I were to blue sky this, you know, I think computer is what I would target. It seemed to access personal data, understand intent, and execute a variety of multi-step tasks. Mm-hmm. And it was generally well behaved.
Right.
So what I'd be looking for is, you know, something along those lines, a proactive digital assistant, you know, something that was going to help me, you know, stay informed and on track throughout the day, week, and month, and able to assist with my tasks. I'd stop short of a digital twin, though, which might imply, you know, simulating my voice, tone, and style, because, Even computer got compromised once in a while.
Yeah, I don't know if they have that big an ambition for the super app. I don't know. Maybe.
Hey, good to have goals, right?
I mean, what I have read and heard about this is the super app might be the way Microsoft tries to make it look like there's just one Copilot, right? So we have many, many different Copilots in Microsoft. People got confused. They just seem to proliferate. They tried to tamp it down. They keep coming out with more of them. And I think Microsoft needs a way to say to customers, here's your Copilot workspace, or whatever they end up calling it. And here are all the different things you can do in that workspace. So maybe something like a tab metaphor on the top with like code and ChatGPT. just chat, Copilot chat. And maybe something with these new always on agents as a tab. So I think we're probably going in that direction. But my biggest question is, are they actually going to try to make this one experience for enterprises and consumers? Because to me, that seems like a really big bite to bite off.
Yeah, and I think you just tapped into why I'm skeptical of the super apps. I don't know if, you know, combining the consumer with the work is, you know, a viable goal at this point in time, at least not for V1.
Yeah.
I think businesses would be really concerned about, you know, crossing the streams by having them both in there. And then, you know, the more realistic target, of course, is kind of consolidating the Copilot experience, which they've been trying to do with the Copilot app. In general, I mean, you go in there and you've got lots of different things that you could do, but you know, how do you make it useful? And I think one of the challenges that they have is that Microsoft has been saying, you know, we've been embedding this in places where you work. Mm-hmm. So to create the super app, you sort of kind of have to invert that whole premise and make the Copilot app where you do work. And what does that really mean? I mean, so you could potentially combine Teams and Outlook and some of those types of tasks in one area along with your agents. But, you know, I kind of look at it from the perspective of, all right, well, what if I'm working in a Word document or a PowerPoint?
Right.
Are we talking about folding in the Office experience into this? Which, you know, we have the Office agents in there, which, you know, so you could. Mm-hmm. But I then start to wonder about the whole idea of jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah. And
are we really just going to get something that is mediocre across the board?
Right. So. More of a Franken app than a super app.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Yeah. I guess we'll see. They say this summer. We'll see.
All right. Stay tuned.
I know. Okay. Now I want to turn our direction a little bit, because after Build ended, you wrote a very interesting post for us for the Directions blog, where you tied together how Microsoft's latest product and strategy directions that were amplified at Build reflect its approach to AI. And you made it sound very simple and made sense. I was like, okay, I like your logic, but I feel like this is something many users may not yet have kind of pieced together. So let's talk about some of the things you raised in that post. So first off, this was a bold contention, but you said ROI is the wrong lens when it comes to Microsoft's AI strategy. Now, I think Microsoft would like that message, because nobody can figure out how to calculate ROI on Copilot and the agents, including Microsoft, right? So let's talk about what you meant when you said that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think people who, you know, not just Microsoft, but everybody is having trouble calculating.
True. That's fair.
ROI on AI. And it's going to get interesting, because Anthropic announced its IPO. OpenAI is expected to announce its IPO, and they're going to have to figure out how to show revenue, what the potential is. So I think ROI is in everybody's view as a metric for all of this. And because of the financial pressures everyone is experiencing, you know, it's kind of like a short-term expectation. It's like, okay, we've invested. We need to see what our returns are going to be on this investment. Mm-hmm. But Microsoft doesn't necessarily play that game. at least not all the time.
Yeah.
And they are, you know, they're looking at the long haul here. So they're willing, I think, to sacrifice the short term gains from Copilot and other AI initiatives in order to position themselves for the longer term shot at platform dominance. So it's a playbook they've used before. They've used it with Windows. They've used it with Office. Those seem to have worked out pretty well.
Right.
And based on the Build conference, you know, that looks like what they're angling to do again.
I don't disagree that they're always looking at the long-term strategy view versus the short-term. So another point you explored in your post was where lock-in actually happens in Microsoft's AI stack these days. So what's changed here? Why isn't it what everybody thinks it is? And what is it?
Yeah, I think the initial run at all this was all about the models. You know, you had ChatGPT come out, you had Claude come out, and, you know, Microsoft partnered with OpenAI. They were locked in with OpenAI. So there was, you know, a lot of that focus on the models themselves. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in a sense, models are almost a commodity at this point in time,
right,
which may sound a little strange, but, you know, they iterate very quickly. You know, new models are coming out every, you know, much more frequently than they were when they first started happening. So I can switch out GPT for Claude or vice versa, you know, depending upon whichever model had, you know, particular capabilities or price point that I was looking for. Mm-hmm. They're also basically generic. They don't have much value until they can actually leverage an organization's data. And a lot of that data is conveniently in M365. And that's where, you know, Microsoft's value proposition starts to come around. That's, you know, why they're introducing Microsoft IQ to provide that enterprise business context, you know, in organizations are like, well, if they're accessing our data, we want some control over them. So Microsoft is, you know, stepping in to provide enterprise security and mm-hmm. governance tools in the form of Entra ID and Agent 365 and Purview. And, you know, all of this is great, but none of it makes sense if the user can't access it or use it. So Microsoft is integrating it into everyday workflows. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got Teams and Office and Outlook and the soon to be fabled Copilot super app. so there's a lot of lot going on with that. But, you know, the Microsoft is kind of raising the bar and betting heavily on the platform itself rather than the underlying models.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's what they're good at, right? And that's where they're that's their wheelhouse. So, yeah, it makes sense. Okay, given what we know post-build about Microsoft's evolving AI strategy, what's your advice? I'm going to put you on the spot. Should enterprises cobble together their own best-of-breed AI stacks using some Microsoft, some third-party, maybe some of their own in-house developed stuff, or go all in or almost all in with Microsoft? Because if you do that, it should be, quote, better together. Or are you going to pull an it depends as your answer to this? I'm curious.
I'll go with C, Mary Jo. It depends. Final answer.
Okay.
So, there's no one-size-fits-all answer to this. We're still in a pretty early stage with a lot of things evolving, maturing, and even disappearing. Expenses are rising. We're still struggling to show cause for AI in the first place. So, you know, enterprises' risk tolerance is a big factor here. Yeah. And Microsoft is also changing the rules of the game this year. They're doing a lot to restructure agreements. They're increasing, you know, prices July 1. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, they're signaling a shift to this cost plus usage model, you know, for AI and who knows what else. So that's why understanding, you know, the potential for platform lock-in is so important here. So companies really have to go into this eyes wide shut. Obviously, you know, if you're a Microsoft shop, it may make sense technically to continue down that path, but you know, your relationship has changed and costs are rising. So you want to be prepared to negotiate. If you're an organization that's concentrating on your line of business and you want to simplify the complexities of using AI, a platform approach like Microsoft's may make sense. And, you know, if you're in the business of AI, meaning you are actually building products and services, you know, with AI, then, you know, best of breed may make more sense. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it depends.
All right. I'm going to let you get away with that because it makes sense to say it depends here.
Thanks.
All right.
I appreciate
that. Thank you. Thank you so much, David. That was great. We really appreciate the time and your insight. So thanks again.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I would like to remind our listeners they can find lots more coverage of all things Microsoft related on directionsonmicrosoft.com. Thank you so much for listening. If you have questions, comments, or any topics you would like to hear the Directions analysts cover in one of these podcasts, please do not hesitate to contact me via X or a Blue Sky. Directions on Microsoft is on LinkedIn, so make sure you follow us there and give us a follow at DirectionsMSFT on X, or Directions on Microsoft on Blue Sky for all of the latest Microsoft enterprise, product, and licensing information. Thanks again.